the Cubs-related podcast presented by CubsInsider.com. My name is Corey. I am joined, as always, by Brendan. And we are coming to you on Tuesday, January 25th, 2022. And Brendan, this is a new catchphrase of mine. We are still in a lockout.
At least we have progress, it looks like, getting towards the end of January here. Before you know it, maybe this lockout will be ending and we'll have pitchers and catchers reporting to Mesa. Optimistic, I'm trying to be.
Yeah, so we will talk a little bit about sort of the progress that we had. I believe the MLB and the Players Union met twice already this week on Monday and Tuesday, so that is good, even if the progress is not necessarily substantive to this point. Progress is still progress, and better than the 3 months or so we had where they weren't even speaking to each other. So yes, that is good. We will touch a little on that. We will talk a little bit about the camp that the Cubs have been running for about 30 of their top prospects. That's a very interesting story that came out in The Athletic earlier this week. But Brendan, I figure just because it is the topic du jour here on Tuesday, we could offer at least a brief thought or two on the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, as it did include one Sammy Sosa falling short, so he will not be a Hall of Famer. And of course, you know, today I think the bigger issue coming with Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds not getting in, but David Ortiz getting in on his first go. So we don't have to get too deep in the weeds here, but, you know, Sosa is Cubs related, so sticking to the title of the podcast, and when the league is in a lockout, it at least gives us a chance to offer some thoughts. Do you care one way or the other about any of this? Do you have a strong feeling about any of this, Sosa or otherwise?
I mean, we heard over the last week maybe Bonds would get in, maybe Clemens, and because they're linked to steroids, what that meant for Sosa, didn't know. But in my mind, like, he was just never going to get in. And does that change things? Like, for me, like, not really. What really matters to me is, like, the Cubs bringing him back in some capacity, even if it's for a day at Wrigley Field. But this is just a moment in time. Like, these writers who make these decisions and vote the way they do, they're going to be gone in, like, 20 years. And the way the younger generation's coming up, they don't care about the steroids as much as these older writers do. And so whether or not these Hall of Fame rules, you know, being left off the ballot because of so many times, like, my hunch is in 10, 20, 30 years, new generation of writers, those rules will be changed, and they're likely going to be Hall of Famers towards the, you know, tail end, I guess, of their lives. Kind of sounds kind of morbid, but I just, like it's whatever. I don't think it's that big of a deal, because it's not surprising.
Brennan,
like,
that's, it comes,
I don't
off,
think it should be surprising.
It comes off kind of, it just drop dead already. You know, that's what I'm hearing from you about these writers.
For the most part, but like, are you surprised they voted like this? Like,
no,
absolutely
no.
Not.
I said, like, Marcus, I said this last time, you know, that the leader of the BBWAA, the Baseball Writers Association of America, is Paul Sullivan, and you can put together.
Is he really Paul? That's Paul Sullivan? I had no
he's
idea.
He's the leader of it now. Oh, I don't think he's been for a while. I think it's new, but, like, you know, you can put together your own opinion on that. And the validity of an organization when it's led by someone like that. But no, I mean, I'm not surprised. It is a little disappointing to me, because this just has such a stink. And I think what you're getting at in terms of the writers is that this whole thing just has a stink of, like, what a lot of us think is kind of wrong with the game of baseball and holding back the game of baseball. And that is this sort of, like, rooted in the older mentality. It's really best embodied, I think, by when you listen to John Smoltz on the World Series broadcast or whatever. All he does is complain and talk about how baseball used to be better and guys don't do this anymore and the game used to be like this, right? And that's what's wrong with baseball, I think, in a nutshell. And it's not really something you see in a lot of sports. When people are watching the Bills and the Chiefs, that game on Sunday that was electric, right? you don't have the biggest pundits in the NFL getting on afterward going, well, back in my day, mm-hmm. we played defense. And, it, you know, they don't do that. They're all just like, wow, what a great game, right? And baseball is like the opposite. It's just a bunch of old people complaining about the current state of the game and the types of players. And what I'm getting at is this Hall of Fame thing just is a really, you know, it's a microcosm of that whole attitude. And I don't like... As I kind of said with Lester, like the criteria to be a Hall of Famer is all over the place. It's pretty much made up, right? But regardless of what you think of a lot of these guys as people and some of their actions off the field and even on the field, if you have a Hall of Fame and it does not include who your league recognizes as the all-time home run leader, you don't have a Hall of Fame. You have something else. Whatever you want to call it is fine, but it's just really silly, right? Like, I think it was, I saw a lot of people sort of articulate it this way, but like, the Hall of Fame should tell the story of the sport, right? And you don't have that story without Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds and someone like Roger Clemens, right? You just don't. I don't know what you have, but you have something different.
I don't think the Hall of Fame matters as much as it did, you know, 10, 20 years ago. Now, to the players themselves, like, yeah, of course, like, that's a huge honor. But the way that the players can communicate with fans post-career, post-playing career, has shifted quite a bit. So you look at someone like Ron Santo, who unfortunately never got a Hall call during his lifetime, that did not affect his lore in Cubs fandom whatsoever. In fact, it may have heightened it because he was not in the Hall of Fame. So the Hall, like, I don't personally care about it. Like, the...
And the, well, I guess the reason I think a lot of us stopped caring about it, the way that they did Ron, and then they let him in after he died, like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and it's like, there is... So, like, you try to understand why, you know, these writers and people like Smoltz, like, why do they behave like this? Why do they seem so negative and talking down on the modern game? And I think baseball has this purity concept to it where it's a very historical figure in history and they want to preserve those historical pieces of the game. So I think it's almost like a defense, like you're trying to preserve that. So I can understand where those people come from. However, to your point, like I do think it's a detriment because your focus, their focus on highlighting those aspects of the game they don't like, it takes away from the moments and the examples of why the game has grown mm-hmm. and has gotten better.
Yeah.
And that's just not well, right. And so like I think
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean I think when it comes to Bonds and Clemens and Sosa, like Hall of Fame or not, they're going to be huge figures in baseball history and kind of like in that same tone as Ron Santo not being in the Hall of Fame. Because of that, they're going to continue to get attention. And I think like Santo, when he did unfortunately pass away and got into the Hall of Fame, I do think there's going to be something similar for these current steroid guys. Not that they're going to die and then get in, but once the next generation of baseball writers retire and you get different perspectives in there, and again from my perspective the younger writers seem very much pro that type of era, not like not pro steroids but recognizing the frequency and the commonness of that. And you look at like Jeff Passan as an example, he was very much voting for those guys. He's very much disappointed with not seeing Bonds, Clemens, etc. in the Hall of Fame. So I think that type of era mentality will just keep growing and growing, and there will be a time when those guys do get in.
Yeah, it's just somehow it's just a shame that, you know, this is driving, you know, because this is also I think the type of thing that doesn't really help the game grow or its position, just especially with younger people. I just don't like the authority that a lot of these writers have, and this maybe kind of like self-importance that they would get from being the gatekeeper of allowing some of these guys in or not. And, you know, like, especially to your point, you know, you talk about like, oh, they don't like what this era and what it says to the game's history. Like, let's go through the Hall of Fame and take a look at everybody else that's in there, right? Because I'm sure, Brendan, none of them were cheating in some way or terrible people off the field, right? Of course not, right? Everybody before the steroid era was great, right? Sure thing. Don't look into all of that if you want to apply that standard to everything. So I think it just would be so easy. Like, even if you wanted to, like, put them in a steroid era wing or something like that, right? Like, who cares? But, like, keeping them out is just so lame and doesn't tell the story of the game, you know? And especially speaking to Sosa, if we're coming from the Cubs angle, like, where in the world is the game of baseball without Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire in 1998? Are you and I even watching baseball if Sammy Sosa doesn't happen in 1998? Not. Right. So like, leave these guys out for this is just weird. And, you know, then you go down a whole different rabbit hole when you talk about David Ortiz getting in for some reason, even though he was connected to it as well. I guess because he was nicer to the media than Barry Bonds was.
They're arguing that his substance was, you know, unintentional.
But, like, come at that point, like, what are we doing? You know what I mean? Like, what are you doing at that point? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So anyway, to another point that you made, though, sticking on the Cubs and Sosa, you know, the Giants released a statement just kind of touting Barry Bonds' accomplishments and saying that they hoped he would be a Hall of Famer someday. And it does draw a pretty significant contrast to the, you know, shunning, basically, that the Cubs have been doing of Sammy Sosa. And, you know, again, like, obviously the position of two people that are Brendan and I's age on someone like Sosa is that the Cubs should at least recognize him. And again, similar to the Hall of Fame, like, just acknowledge he's a part of your history. He's a part of a lot of why your fans are the way that they are. And you can present him and that history and your connection in whatever way you see fit. But removing it all together is just, I think, the wrong choice, and leaves a lot of people kind of feeling left out and just not great about the whole thing. So I think the moral.
But why do you think they won't?
What's an ownership
bring
thing?
Sammy back?
Isn't it?
Yeah, but like yeah, it is. An
yeah,
ownership
they
thing.
Just.
I mean, you've heard
they just feel uncomfortable.
You've heard Tom say he needs to apologize, but like, but seriously though, like, yeah, with Sammy, when you have a good majority of your fan base who do want to see their former favorite player get some type of recognition, right? You're not going to appease every single Cubs fan. We know that. Like, half Cubs fans, like, hate the ownerships to begin with. But to just exclude Sammy completely from that history is disingenuous to why you have so many fans to begin with. There was a picture today I saw of, it's like the trademark, you know, Sammy Sosa hop when he hits that home run against the Marlins in the NLCS. Like, that moment right there, ball goes on the Waveland, you see the Waveland crowd going nuts. Like, that moment right there is instrumental to, I know, your fandom, to my fandom, to, I'm sure, thousands upon thousands of young Cubs fans. So to just not even acknowledge that that was part of your history and to only throw up on, like, the video board every other game, like, a small little clip of Sammy Sosa, it's obvious and it's a reminder of the ownership's attempt to just kind of wash away that part of Cubs history. It just doesn't feel right.
I think, yeah, ultimately I think it's sort of the same argument with the Hall of Fame. I just think it's weird to create these situations where, like, you do kind of acknowledge something, but then you also want to pretend like it didn't happen. It's very much like having your cake and eating it too. And I wouldn't advocate for this, right? But, like, my feeling would almost be if you're not going to put Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame and, like, as a league you're okay with that, then get him out of the record book, right? If you're going to do it, you got to go all the way. Because to me, it just, this situation is so weird. Like, if you look up who the all-time home run leader, it's Barry Bonds. But then at the same time, they're like, no. Like, we got to, you know, pretend that that didn't happen. And, like, we're not going to, it's like, again, I would vote him into the Hall of Fame. I'm not advocating for that, but it just has the feel of, like, if you're going to do this, like, do it, you know, as opposed to, like, sometimes picking and choosing when it's okay to acknowledge that these guys existed and, like, played in the game. And then, you know, I think the cherry on top, right, is Bud Selig's in the Hall of Fame. He was in control yeah. of it all. Like, what a
you
joke,
let it go.
Right? Like, the guy yeah, who was supposed to be overseeing all of this and, I guess, stopping these guys with steroids and doing all of this, he's in the Hall of Fame, right? But the guys who played in the league and you know, made the league what it was when he was the commissioner, they're not. It's like, it's just stupid. Like, that's all it really is. And, like, I don't think you're pro-steroids or something, like, for thinking these guys should be in the Hall of Fame. You can acknowledge that. You can tell the story however you want, but they're part of the story. And it just sort of feels like you're handing people a book, but you've ripped out some pages, right? And it's yeah. just like, well, something's missing here.
Yeah, I mean, it's with steroids, it's like, it's not acknowledging that those had effects on performance. Like, of course they do, right? It's understanding the degree to which that type of substance has on your numbers. Like, maybe it is significant, maybe it's not significant, but that's not for me to judge. The reality is, those are the numbers, those are the record books. Yes, those players may have irked writers back in the day who were trying to make their dollar and have some attractive headlines. It is what it is, but you can't ignore that part of your history. And it's emblematic of the sport, and it's all wrapped up together. Even going into this lockdown, it often feels like the majority of fans' voice is just not.
Yes. Well, not and heard. Actually today, the players, a lot of players now later in the evening, tweeting or posting in various places, like, how is Barry Bonds not in the Hall of Fame? Right. I saw Rizzo say right. it. I saw Marcus Stroman say it. I saw a bunch of other people say it. I saw, Alex Wood was tweeting about it, like, a bunch of guys, like, from different teams and situations, like, they all feel the same way. And so I like that point, that it's like, I don't think that this subgroup of baseball writers is really, like, the representative voice for
but
baseball.
And it feels like it. It feels like that, too, with the owners, with having really weird media leaks, Rob Manfred before the lockout happened, saying, you know, it's on the players, they went away, blah blah blah. It's like, guys, like, how much more negative press do you want to give this sport? Like, this is like, it's an entertainment industry. Like, stop with yeah. this. It's so, it's like, maybe because we watch baseball more than any other sport, but other than, like, the NFL lockout and, like, the referee stuff and the NBA lockout 10 years ago, I know hockey had their thing a while ago. It seems like that's kind of a thing in the past. And baseball, for some reason, man, from early 2000s, the steroid era, all those reports to now this and the COVID lockout stuff 2 years ago, there's always a problem. And it always feels as if a huge majority of players, too, as you mentioned on Twitter, and fans, it's like, you know what, like, whatever. Like, their voice doesn't matter. I'm going to shoo them aside. It's the owners. It's the former players on major media networks. And it's these baseball writers who, quite obviously, they come from an era where you have that type of hyperbolic, you know, cutthroat opinions. And it's just like, that's not relatable anymore. Like, what's, like, the guy's, I forgot his name, like, on MLB Network, was it Mad Dog or whatever? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Chris Russo. He's terrible.
Yeah, Chris yeah. Russo, right? So, I mean, he plays as his shtick, right? Like, coming off as, like, this, like, cutthroat type guy. And that type of mentality and that type of, like, baseball writer mindset, that's going to be gone. And because that will be gone, I do think at some point this conversation will be turned. But again, that could be an optimistic mindset for myself as well. Maybe that's not actually true.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, again, like, the whole thing's made up. Like, the criteria is made up. Like, you can vote for whoever you want if you feel like it. But this just feels not right. It just, again, feels like you're not really telling the full story. And
it's like, you know, Sosa's going to be back one day. Like, it's just, it's, to me, it's inevitable. Maybe not in the next 5 or 10 years, but one day he's going to be back at Wrigley, because that's what happens. You get new people in there. you know, people forget stuff, and he's going to be back. It's just unfortunate we always do this. We always wait too long, and we always regret it. It's just, it's going to be another scenario just like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just, you know, some general Hall of Fame Sammy Sosa thought. Again, I, you know, really, truly did kind of give up caring about the Hall of Fame with the way that they did Ron Santo and how desperately he wanted that when he was alive. And, you know, they gave it to him pretty much the minute he died. So that, I think, always rubbed pretty much all of Cubs fans the wrong way. So, you know, this is whatever. I'll pretend to care again when John Lester's on the ballot, but other than that, yeah, it just sort of is what it is. So I do want to talk about this sort of training camp that the Cubs are doing, because I think that this was a cool story from The Athletic and, you know, maybe a signal of things in a more broad sense going in the right direction for minor leaguers and prospects and things like that. And, you know, I'll start by saying, like, you know, partially, like, this obviously feels like kind of applauding, you know, million and billion dollar organizations for doing the what seems like the bare minimum. But this is still good that the Cubs are doing it. And I think they're alone, at least in something on this scale. And basically what they've been doing is, I think through November to February, I think basically until spring training would start, they are hosting about 30 prospects for like a training camp with a, you know, pretty substantial investment covering housing, food, transportation, stuff like that at some of their instructional facilities, and just getting all these prospects together, providing all of that for them, and having them together in this camp. And you know, there's a lot of strides to be made, kind of like I was alluding to, in terms of how minor leaguers are treated. And, you know, we saw so many stories, even just last season, of minor leaguers without places to sleep at night, how they're working extra jobs. So that all is stuff that still needs to be taken care of and you know, not treated the way that it is. But this is not something that I think other teams are doing, at least on this scale. And again, like, it's somewhat of a market inefficiency, Brendan, to be the organizations that are kind of going above and beyond for how you're treating your prospects. And so this is a good one from the Cubs that they're doing this, that they had this idea, Jed Hoyer. And it was, yeah, this was from The Athletic. It was a fun read, and it's good to see.
This is exactly what you want to see any developmental system doing, right? Like, giving your young guys the resources to improve. In my mind, it made little sense to expect optimal performance when those young players don't have those resources. So to bring in your top prospects, and this could just be the start, right? Like, maybe one day they'll expand this, but to bring in 30 of your top prospects, you put them together. I'm assuming they're living across the street from the Mesa Complex in those hotel rooms over there.
Yep, furnished apartments provided by the Cubs close to the Mesa Complex.
There you go. So you got that. You have, you know, healthy, nutritious food, and you create this competitive environment that's good for everyone involved. So Brendan Davis had a great quote that I liked, and he said, quote, "The only way you can compete like that is being around guys like this. It's an awesome environment. We're going to be in a really good spot heading into spring training. I'm excited to see where our minor league system ranks after something like this. I think there's going to be a lot of breakout years," end quote. And I think given the intention to get those guys to the next step, this is what you want to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot to like about this. As you said, firstly, it's always been weird, and again, still a lot of progress to be made in this area. It's always been weird when you see those stories about how little some minor leaguers get paid, or how, you know, poor their housing arrangements are, travel arrangements, things like that. Because, like, you've invested in these players, right? Yeah. It's a weird way of thinking, like, to not support them better, so that they can work and do their job and ultimately provide more to your franchise, even from a business perspective, not no, even the human
solely,
element.
From solely a business perspective.
Right, solely a business perspective. Yeah. It never makes sense when you read these stories about how poorly the minor leaguers are treated and handled, because it's like, don't you want these guys to succeed so that they can make you more money, right. right? Again, even if you're not including the human element, which you should. But from this particular thing from the Cubs, the first thing that I really like is on those lines, right? You have all these top prospects, and you want them to feel like the Cubs are going above and beyond to provide stuff like this and give them those chances to do their work and get better and train in an optimal environment. Like, from the perspective of, you just made a bunch of trades and got a bunch of young players, you're talking about building the next great Cubs team. So yeah, this seems like putting your money where your mouth is in making that investment towards these players and towards the future. But also, you hope that this is the type of stuff that gives you a leg up in certain conversations, right? The Cubs have brought in a lot of guys over the years on minor league deals and spring training invites and stuff like that. And you know, we just talked like last week or 2 weeks ago about signing international free agents. And we talk sometimes about bringing guys over from Japan or different countries when they're posted and things like that. This is the type of stuff that you want to stand out to those players, right? Or like a guy that you draft out of high school and he's thinking, do I want to forego going to college or do I want to, wait for a better draft status, whatever. You want players like that to look and go, you know what? This organization has a history of treating prospects well, treating minor leaguers well, treating guys who aren't, their top paid starting pitcher on their major league team really well. And I respect that. And I want to be a part of that organization. So this is just one step towards that. And, certain organizations do things better, worse, et cetera. But this is progress in that regard. And it's the type of thing you want the Cubs to be at the forefront of.
When you look at the Cubs just signing international free agents, they just signed Christian Hernandez's younger brother. Why did that happen? Well, probably because of that trust factor with his older brother. But that can be extended to other people as well. To your point, when you hear that the Cubs are doing something unique like this, it signals to that player, hey, I'm in good shape. My likelihood of succeeding is higher with the Cubs if this is how they go about operating.
Yeah.
And that looks really good for young guys who are trying to figure out who they should sign with. And even in extreme instances like the Ohtani example a few years ago, that might stand out as well. And you can use those examples as persuasion points to bring in new players. That is separate completely from actually promoting the development of these guys. Like, I like the competitive aspect when you bring in these are the best young players in the Cubs system, like undeniably the best. And they're going to be with each other, like roommates, getting every resource they need in a facility where there's no major leaguers at all at the facility right now. It is just them. That is extremely valuable. I'm excited to see how that translates to success on the field in terms of pitching or pitch development, or you look at Ed Howard or Brennan Davis, strength development, getting those reps in against those top pitchers in the system. Like, it's almost an extra Arizona Fall League in a competitive environment, but in an environment that's more like conducive to like failing and adjusting more rapidly. I think it's awesome. I think it's just the first step of more to come, and this new emphasis, not only for the Cubs on minor leaguers, but hopefully, for other teams as well.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I like that quote from Brennan Davis a lot, because you have made this investment in, obviously, in younger guys being that next great Cubs team, that phrase that we keep hearing so much. And this is a great way to build that chemistry, right? And just to, like, you want these guys, whether it's Brennan Davis or Owen Casey or Reggie Preciado, whoever it is, right, to feel like that's their destination, right? This is on our shoulders, right? We're the guys that they traded all these, you know, huge names in Cubs history for, or we're the guys that they drafted and this, that, and the other that have these expectations. We're going to grow together. We're going to go to the system together, and we're going to win the World Series for the Chicago Cubs at Wrigley Field. Yes. Yeah. Like, that's the attitude you want them to develop, and the best way to foster that, I think, is having them work together and instilling that in them. Jed Hoyer was at the camp the other day. I saw some pictures of him with Brennan Davis, with some of the other guys. Like, and you want that attitude. Like, hey, the investment is in you. Just because you're not on the major league team right now, just because you're not Marcus Stroman or Ian Happ or any of these other guys at the major league level, like, you're important. You matter. Your development matters. Your standing in the organization matters. And we want to start to foster a better relationship in that way. And it does kind of remind you, like, we saw some little instances of that when that last core was coming up. Like, you saw in spring training or with the Iowa Cubs or, you know, whatever level, like, you saw those pictures of Chris Bryant and Javi Baez or Jorge Soler and some of the other guys. Like, you got the sense that, like, they were in it together, right? They knew how important they were to the organization. They knew that one day they would be doing it together. And you want to feel that camaraderie or that relationship, not just when they set foot at Wrigley Field, right? You want that building and that attitude kind of building in them. Like, this is our journey. We're on it together. And we've got a lot of stuff that we're going to accomplish in the future together.
Yeah. When you go up through the system with familiarity, and that's what the Cubs had when they won the World Series in 2016. Like, a lot of those guys came up with each other. We saw pictures of, you know, Javi and Soler, like, from years before they were eventually teammates at the big league team. So when you come up together like that, like, I imagine the familiar environment is going to create, you know, the opportunity to adjust more and try new things. So I do think that's really advantageous, and it does, in the current moment, like, push each other. And not to say that absent of a camp like this, these players would not be doing this. I'm not saying that, but you cannot discount the value of your very, very best players pushing each other in winter right now, and you cannot doubt the potential benefits of that. You're not going to get that environment anywhere else. Like, money's going to be an issue getting everyone together, and this seems like a no-brainer. It almost makes you think, like, why were they not doing this before? I think in terms of, you know, what's next for these guys, you look at Brennan Davis, like, he's close, man. Like, he's close to being there right at Wrigley. And I think when you look at the younger guys like Owen Casey and James Triantos and Christian Hernandez and his younger brother, like all these guys, like, when you see Brennan Davis at this camp and then maybe, you know, 6-7 months from now he'll be starting center field at Wrigley Field, it does validate that these efforts are monumental and worthwhile, and it should be like a boost for them.
Yeah, and I think it's good to, you know, again, kind of have these moments, not just in spring training, right? Like, I remember last year in spring training, we were all, like, bugging when we saw those photos of Brennan Davis when he was with the MLB team and in the lineup with some of those big names, or walking off the field with, you know, whoever it was, Rizzo, Bryant, whoever it was at the time, right? Like, you want that stuff more often, right? Not just for a few weeks when they're together in Mesa. And this way you also get that, not with the major league guys, but you get that with some of the super young guys and Brennan Davis, right? So it sort of trickles down to a different level. Now, Davis is the star of this camp, right? He's the big name. But it's good to have him working with some of the guys who are still years away and who maybe are going to start the season in, you know, rookie ball or high A, whatever it is. You want to get that kind of, like, relationship, that flow building through the system, not just when they happen to, you know, leak over to major league camp for a week or two in March or February. And it's especially good that you're doing this with the uncertainty of the major league season and what's going on there. Like, we can't deal with those guys, but, like, let's make sure we're taking care of these prospects. But there's a good line in the article from The Athletic that I think kind of summarizes this whole process, right, that the Cubs are undergoing right now. And the line is, the big idea is that the Cubs are supposed to be at the forefront of whatever happens next in player development. And I think that's a very succinct way of summarizing why this is such a good thing that they're doing, and you hope that it continues to lead to more stuff like this. Like, for whatever reason, again, as I've said several times, like, there's a lot of change that needs to come to how minor league players are treated and stuff like that. But for whatever reason, this is not something that every team does, right? And it is unique that the Cubs are doing it for this many weeks and on this scale with this many players and taking care of the stuff that they're taking care of. And so whether we need to make further strides or not, you want the Cubs to be the ones doing it first. And it sounds like they are.
In addition to just, you know, being around your teammates and fostering those relationships, the same can be said about the coaches and the way they've restructured, you know, their scouting departments, their coaching infrastructures, their development infrastructures. This is also an opportunity for them to learn and to grow that camaraderie and that working relationship, not just between they themselves as coaches, but also between them and players. It gives them more opportunities to gain information, to identify weaknesses and areas of improvement. So it's not just the players themselves, but it's the system. It's those infrastructures that are getting more information and more data so you can improve that way. So it's a no-brainer. Like, why were they not doing this 5 years ago? I don't know. Maybe it's just didn't seem obvious at the time, but this is a good first step. And I think it's going to be fun to see these guys continue to develop and age. And they may look back at these instances as some of the more influential moments in their careers, Corey.
Yeah. Again, like, we all want to see the Cubs spend on the major league roster. You know, we were talking about Carlos Correa. We'll talk about him and other guys again when the lockout eventually ends and stuff like that. But when the team makes those trades and they go for such young players and stuff like that, what you want to see is stuff like this, because as I said, like, put your money where your mouth is, right? If you felt the system needed an overhaul and you needed to get younger, you needed to move on from the core, et cetera, okay. But do what you can to really put that effort into the next great Cubs team, not just being a tagline, being something that you're really invested in. And this first offseason, after they made a lot of those trades, you're seeing them do that and saying, hey, like, the article in The Athletic talks about how, you know, Jed Hoyer and the baseball operations staff, they have a certain budget that they work with Tom Ricketts on, and this was how they wanted to use some of that money. And ownership agreed, and this is a program that they decided to undertake. And that's the type of stuff you want to see, right? You want to see it all happening at the major league level too. But you've made such a commitment to these younger guys and to your system. Keep going. Like, spend the money, do what you need to do to make sure that that is paying off in the way that you envision it paying off, in the way that you're taught, like, so that it's not just talk, right, Brendan? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, acquiring these young guys and replenishing the system isn't just talk. It's like, no, we got all these talented guys and we are going to max out what we can do to deliver the pipeline that we are dreaming on.
Signing free agents that are in their 30s continues to go towards more of developing players, finding those types of players that were missed for many years and developing them. As that continues to be the center of focus, these types of programs might pop up, and the Cubs might be the first team to do this. In the past, many teams copycatted the Cubs in some of their ways to find market inefficiencies. I think the biggest obvious one was when the Cubs were the first to blow past those penalties when you signed international free agents. Once the Cubs did that, the next year other teams did that, and other teams did that. And they were the first to kind of imprint that type of strategy. And this might be another example. And for, what, 3-4 years now, we had so many episodes where you and I are discussing, man, it feels like the Cubs are not at the forefront anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we had, I mean, we must have talked about that for hours upon hours from 2018 on. And now it's the complete opposite. Now, I mean, not totally, but it
in
feels,
some ways, yeah.
Yeah, it feels as if the conversation has changed a little bit. And now we're talking about what the Cubs are doing differently. And you're reading articles on a more like specific note here of why the Cubs are like using more sinkers and what's the thought process there and all, what's with these new resources and the new pitching infrastructure, hitting infrastructure. Like you're seeing things change and shift in ways that you didn't see when Theo was at the prime of his Cubs tenure in 2016, 2015. And it's changed quite a bit. And you can be upset about the Cubs not spending money over the last few years. You know, we are, of course, and some of the trades, you know, it's frustrating. But separating that out, finally, it feels as if the Cubs are making obvious strides in their scouting and their international free agent signing and their player development. It feels as if they're getting that mojo back that we felt like in the early 2010s.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a lot of things an organization, a baseball organization, needs to do to succeed and win on a yearly basis and stuff like that. Spending money is part of it, and the Cubs need to, you know, get back to doing that at the level we expect from them. But all of this is a part of it too. And like you said, Brennan, that's a great point. Like there were years where it felt like they were spending money, maybe not enough, but they were spending near the top of the league. But they weren't nailing these other areas. And obviously the best place to be is when you're hitting on all of these fronts. So it's a process, but this is obviously a step in the right direction, at least from this particular subsection of running a baseball organization. So let's finish with just where we are in the lockout. And there was some progress. So we are getting there. But I will – I want to read it's a tweet from writer Jared Diamond, and I think it's a good caveat to sort of start this on. And he's talking about, so the first tweet he said, the parties are still far, far apart on how much money would be available to players in this bonus pool, really far apart, but it's a start. And then he goes on to say, this applies to many issues they're discussing. The parties aren't close on just about anything when it comes to core economics. But the point is there has been movement. Small movements, but movements. It's a start. So I wanted to read that because there's still a lot of distance here. They do not have an agreement. The lockout is not over. And by the sound of it, we're not really specifically close. But progress is good. And as I said, there was a period where they weren't talking at all. They've talked a couple days this week. I think they might get back together this week or at least soon. And they're starting to get into some of these specific issues. One of the ones that they discussed, at least on Tuesday, was the raising of the minimum salary for players with 0 to 1 year of service time, and moving that number up. A huge concern for the Players Association is guys who are not arbitration eligible, so pre-arbitration eligible players who have not accrued that service time, getting more money, right? Like guys that come up for a short period of time, not making such a small amount. And of course, you know, you look at these numbers, like relative to you or I, Brennan, this is not a small amount. But of course, like this is a big business. So that's one of the key issues, is taking care of those pre-arb players. And that was one of the things that seemed to be making some positive progress. They're working on the pre-arbitration bonus pool. They are looking at those minimum salaries and stuff. But you know, the idea is getting some of these young players paid more before they enter arbitration. That was one of the key things that they discussed today. Yeah. So again, some progress. It's at least getting there. How we're looking on terms of, you know, deadlines and things like that, it's too tough to say, but we're maybe inching forward.
It does feel like progress is being made. Like we're late in this process though. Like it's, you know, today's January 25th and pitchers and catchers typically report in mid-February. That's 3 weeks from now. The Cactus League schedule should begin on February 26th. That's 4.5 weeks from now. They got to get this done ASAP. Like, even to get pitchers and catchers reporting at the appropriate time, some think they need to get a deal done within the next week to even make the first spring training game on February 26th. Some people think they need to make a deal within 2 weeks. So, yeah, finally they're pushing the door forward a little bit, but, you know, we're getting late here. And for all we know, there could be some type of sidetrack thing going on, but it does appear that both sides are making concessions, which is great, but it feels like it's getting a little bit too close for comfort, and I don't know how to feel about that, right? Part of me is happy that this is progressing, but part of me is still disappointed and still wondering if this is enough, because, as I said, pitchers and catchers, three weeks from now should be reporting, and it doesn't feel as if the big foundational aspects are in place. Maybe that happens tomorrow when the day ends, but right now, like, we still have a lot of room to go, man. And
yeah,
like, you know, 3 weeks, they got to get this done to even get in a respectable amount of spring training games. It has to be done fast.
Yeah, and I think the concern is if you hit any sort of impasse, right, that you kind of can't get past, you really don't have the time for that, right?
You have no room for error.
Yeah, at this point, yeah. Like, the, you know, sides are going to have to make concessions. You're going to have to really fine-tune the negotiations on the numbers. Like I said, I'm talking about the kind of salary minimums for pre-arb players and stuff like that. They didn't settle on that, but they at least kind of made some progress towards getting to those numbers that they like. But in all of these issues, if you hit a roadblock, like a sort of like stopping point for one of the sides, like if you don't agree to this, we're out. You don't have time for that. So, you know, how that goes, I don't know. And it's also, you know, I've read this point a lot, Brendan, but it really does stand out as we're talking about this. Like, it's like so public, you know? There's something so weird about, like, knowing the negotiation points of some of these things, like, in public. It probably doesn't matter, but there's just something really weird about it.
Reporting that? Like, you hear the reports from, like, you know, Heyman and Passan. Like, who's giving the information to those guys?
I would assume it's like anything else. There's points that the owners are comfortable leaking and points that the players are comfortable leaking.
You know? What's the intention, though? Like, does it put, like, negotiation pressure on these guys?
Well, that I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I, you know, as we've discussed before, I would think that, you know, the average fan doesn't care about this stuff at all. I don't dial into every detail of this. I'm not at the negotiating table. Like, I want the players to get their just due, but, like, I'm not sitting here reading every piece of negotiating data and stuff like that. Like, I'm not a part of it.
Yeah.
So I mean, someone who's not freaking out over 162 Cubs games a year, I'm sure they don't care about this. So it's just interesting, like, reading all these specific numbers. It's like, why do I know this? Like, why is this available to me?
But I feel like, dude, I feel as if, you know, maybe in future years this will be fixed, but there's no deadline for this, and there's, like, no neutral arbiter that makes a deadline for this. And as a result, what happened, this entire offseason is completely gone. Like, we spent the last, like, 6 weeks doing nothing. Like it sucks. And then you have maybe 10 days for free agency to finish up. Like, this is bad for the owners. It's bad for the players. It's bad for the sport. So if there's another negotiation in the next 5 years, like, something has to happen where it's like, all right, you know, by January 1st, this has to be done. And if not, here are the consequences on both sides. Like, this, I don't know. It just seems like this is, you know, another example of players and owners who just cannot agree on this. And it's going to happen again in the future. It's annoying.
Can we get marquee cameras to this prospect camp in lieu of the major league team? Is that a possibility?
I mean, listen, if you want to pay for me to fly down to Arizona, I'll get my iPhone out. I'll do it myself, Corey. I'll go on the field. I'll bring my A2000 out there.
I'm not paying you for anything.
I'll take ground balls with the team, man. Maybe they'll sign me up.
Anyway, I'm not going to indulge that. But, like, because for me, like, you and I will get on here and we'll talk when they hit a CBA. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about the data points and if the players got enough or conceded on too many things, whatever. We'll talk about that, and then we're gonna have to rip into free agency trades and all of that.
Dude, like half the market's not even signed.
Yeah,
yet.
we're not. It's gonna be a whirlwind. It's gonna be nuts.
It is. That's gonna be a lot of episodes, maybe.
Like, we are also getting to the point where, like, I joke about the marquee and the prospect stuff because we're getting to the point where, like, I need some baseball stuff, and this kind of, like, to bring, like, our whole episode today, like, full circle, like, the fact that the predominant conversations about the game of baseball in the last few days, even just today, right, are the snubbing of some of the all-time greats who, may have cheated, definitely cheated, probably cheated, however you want to look at that, but from the Hall of Fame, and how the negotiating between the ownership and the Players Association is moving at like a snail's pace, and they're bickering over hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars, right? It's terrible. Like, that's what the discussion is, right? It's just not good, and I just need some baseball in my life. Like, I just want to watch. Like, I would watch David Ross hit a fungo on the infield right now. I'd kill for
awesome.
It.
Awesome.
You know what I mean?
Love that. Yeah.
Like, that would be sick. Like, Andy Green running some like catching drills or something like that.
Let's
go. I need some baseball that isn't so like bleak and negative and business oriented, and it's just like. I can deal with it for a while because we're not supposed to have baseball on January 25th, but we're just getting to that point where it's like, oh, this stuff is really getting old. And like, I just don't, like, I care, but I don't care anymore. I just want them to play baseball. I want the players to get what they deserve and get back to what we're all interested in this for anyway. I mean, look, if we have listeners and you're a baseball fan, that's like a huge, like, core economics man or woman, and that's your thing, like, all the power to you, right? Like, I'm not trying to, like, talk you down here, but it's just not my jam, and I need it. I need some actual baseball here.
I mean, you know, from the lockout in 2020, from March to July, and now this, from, what was it, like, first week of December through now, that's like 5-6 months of zero baseball. Man, like, it's so bad for this sport. I'm so sick of trying to find things to talk about, and like it's frustrating. It's like, of all the times to do the CBA negotiation, you're doing it off of a year that you still had like 2 months with limited baseball fans. Like, it's like, what are you guys doing? Like, you're an idiot. Like, Rob Manfred, you are an absolute idiot. And like, all of this negotiation tactics and the media stuff before the lockout, it's like, truly zero confidence in this type of operation at this point. So let's get these guys back on the field. Let's get the CBA done. Let's talk about what it means. Get the players signed. Let's go. Let's get this sport back going. I feel as if we haven't had a real baseball in like 2.5 years.
Yeah. So that is where we are at. As the state of things, like, at least we got some progress. I'm not expecting there to be like some massive breakthrough like in the next couple days or anything. Like, I think there's clearly some distance here that they have to cover, but we'll hop on when we need to if there's a major breakthrough or anything. And we'll, you know, take a look at where they are and where they got to, and you know, once they do reach a deal, you know, again, kind of reset the table for what should be a whirlwind of free agency and all of that. But for now, we'll talk to you guys next week. As always, thank you for listening to and supporting the Cubs-related podcast while the sport that we're talking about is in a lockout now for like the fourth month or whatever it is. We appreciate that, and we will we'll be here until Cubs baseball comes back. So we'll talk to you guys soon, and as always, go Cubs.